Blog Talk Radio.
Unbothered. Impermeable. Unbothered. Impermeable. Unbothered. I'm the people's champ. Obama, and you don't understand. Melania. Permeable. Unbothered. Sick. Allergic to the con artist. Fake woke. An imposter. Only real ones up in my roster. Like Junior C. That's my
Happy Tuesday. Is everybody
oh,
there?
Oh, yeah.
Happy Tuesday, family.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
It's been another 2 weeks. Like, it's long, but it's the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
I know. It
always,
seemed like forever.
Always go by when you're having
like,
fun.
Oh, yeah. Time flies when you're having fun.
That's it. Mouth, a lot been going on.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So should we just do, we're going to do hot topics? We're going to do, what's the session going to be today, sis?
Well, there we go.
That's what it was.
Oh, daddy.
I was going to bring it to you.
Sasha and I were talking earlier. And we were talking, you know, I was just saying that, you know, when you look at the hot topics and you look at what's going on, I just thought about my generation. See, this is my third impeachment.
Mm.
And the one before that was Johnson, right after Abraham Lincoln. And he tried to reverse the Civil War. He was trying to appease the Southern states. And so that's why they were impeaching him. And in my lifetime, I lived through Nixon. I was grown. I was mature. I was in the military. I was in college when the impeachment of Richard Nixon occurred. And also, 1990s, the mid-90s, when they impeached President Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And now, here is the next one. Now, the thing about President Nixon is that he resigned before he was able to be impeached. He was on the road to impeachment, but he resigned before when he saw that the news was really bad, and when he saw that the great majority, particularly Barry Goldwater, who was a staunch Republican, was against him, he resigned. But the important thing that I was talking to you about, Sasha, is the fact that your generation, the millennials, the ones that are coming after, when you think about 2000, people born at the turn of the century are now 20 years old. When the World Trade Center went down, the people born the year that that it went down in 2001, they're 19 now. And so
a lot of times
when you're born into a generation, you don't always see the historical grounding for that generation. And so it might be difficult for young people today to understand why what's happening is happening. Let me tell you something, family. There is a cold civil war going on right now. It ain't got hot yet. But we're headed towards another civil war. And what's interesting is that the mindset of the first one is the same mindset of this one, except it's not black against white. It's white against everybody that has been denigrated by European male Christian.
Which is every single person except European male Christians.
That's exactly right. But think about what I'm saying. Whether it be the LGBTQ community, whether it be the African American community, the Hispanic American community, the Native American community, the Muslim American community.
Women?
Which?
Even women.
Say again. Yes, women.
Women,
all of those.
Black, white, every orbit in between.
Which is what's important when you look at your television. I've seen them do comparisons of the impeachment of Nixon, the impeachment of Clinton, and the impeachment of Trump. Look at the people that are participating in the government. If you go back and look at Nixon, you can even Google it. You got nothing but old white men that are in Congress, be they House of Representatives or they're the Senate. You had a couple of African Americans. You might have had a couple of Hispanic Americans, but not many. When you look at the composition of women in Nixon and even in Clinton, but when you look at it today and you see the way in which Congress looks, men of European descent of a certain age now realize their time is up. They're dying out. They are not replenishing their ranks because there is a fertility rate that is at minus right now for Europeans, not just in America. But in Europe, that's what my webinar has been about over the past year and a quarter. I just finished webinar number 4 the other day, where I talked about the psychological factors of white fragility. And it becomes important for us all to understand, your generation understand, you got the power now. And the reason why they're coming down so hard is because they know it now. They know what's happening. They know their time is up. And they know that by the middle of this century, 2045, give or take 25 years from now, peoples of European descent will be the minority. White men will be the minority of the minority. And once they die off, which many of them probably will by 2045, that's it. I watched the awards the other night. Not going to name them because that's not important, but I watched the awards the other night. I saw a lot of European people getting awards. There's a reason for that. Because this is the last go-round for them. There's going to come a time when it's going to be brown on all the shades of brown to black, if you want to do that, because I have a problem with the word brown, because I don't know what that means, because most of us are brown. And the awards will be ours. We'll be the only ones around. And so I thought it would be interesting just to talk about what you're actually looking at as it relates to this impeachment. It's far more than just the impeachment. It's far more than just Russia. It's the end of Western civilization as we know it. But family, and I'll end with this, if that be true, are we ready to take control over our destiny?
And that is the question of the century.
That is the question. You know, we all are so upset with white supremacy and the things that are going on. But the reality of it is that even if all of the peoples of European descent were to vanish as of tonight, tomorrow, are we ready to educate ourselves and to create an economic system for ourselves, to govern ourselves? Do we get along with ourselves? Do we get along with ourselves, not just as person to person, but do we like ourselves as individuals? Do we like each? Do we like us? Do you love yourself? So that becomes the question that I think would be most pertinent right now as we go into this impeachment, because they're saying it's going to be over in 2 weeks. And if that be true, then by the next time we do our little thing here, it should be over.
That's crazy. So when it's over, does that mean that he's going to be out of office?
No, not necessarily. And the way it looks right now, See, they got to hold on to this, and that's why we have to be very clear and strategize and be tacticians. Stop getting emotional about what you see. It doesn't make a difference if he's kicked out of office or not.
Mm.
What matters is, are we going to take power over ourselves?
They'll
always be them. They'll always try to do what they do. That's their nature. The question is, do we understand strategy? Like, for instance, people say, I don't want to vote. Well, if there was a dollar, a quarter, and a penny on a table, see, this is why y'all sometimes used to get embarrassed by me. Because I will pick up that penny.
If you're going out to war, don't leave nothing on the table.
Leave nothing on the table. Everything is
well,
a
we
tool
know which
to be
one
used.
Of them was listening. We know which one of us was listening.
Everything is a tool. You don't leave anything. People say, well, why are you going to vote? What are you voting for? Well, that's the same reason. Well, why are you picking that penny up off the table? Or why are you picking up the pen going off the war? Because if you run out of bullets and then drop your knife, the pen can be a tool or a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So you pick up everything. Some people
mm-hmm.
may say,
you never know what
well,
you
I'd
mean.
Leave the pen. Listen, for those of us who have been on the street and fought street fight, you know everything. It's a tool
mm-hmm.
or a weapon.
That's right.
You don't leave nothing on the table.
That's
I'm not
right.
voting for somebody because they like me. They don't like me. They want to use me. But guess what? Mm-hmm. I'm going to use you.
Right.
And if we don't get in the mix of voting and understand exactly what voting is.
Mm-hmm.
If you see your enemy, you're about to engage with your enemy. And your enemy is telling you, you're saying, oh, I'm not going to do this. And your enemy's saying, yeah, don't do that, don't do that. Wouldn't you kind of look at them and say, you must be scared of what I just said. So that might mm-hmm. be something that they're afraid of. Like all this thing with Joe Biden. That should tell you something. First of all, there are two things about Joe Biden that we all have to realize. I'm talking strategy now. I ain't talking about tactician. I'm not talking about I think that Elizabeth Warren, I think that Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, I think there are a lot of candidates that are still in and are not in anymore that would be phenomenal president.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to be realistic about what you're dealing with here. And you got to make a choice as to what you're going to do, whether you like it or not. And the bottom line is there are two things that tells me Joe Biden is going to be the one that does it. Number one, black women got his back. And one of the things about voting I've always looked at is I've always looked to see who are the great majority of black women going with.
Wow.
And whoever that is normally the person that is either likely to win or should win.
The other thing is,
when Trump went after Biden, of all the people that he could have attacked, why did he attack Joe Biden? Because Joe Biden is the one person that they all fear.
Yep.
Now, did Joe Biden do the things that, yeah, he did. They all do. I ain't looking for no love. I'm looking for strategy. I'm looking for what is best for my people. And so it becomes, I'm not telling people who to vote for. What I'm just observing, what I'm seeing, but most importantly, what I'm saying is we have to vote. And we have to understand why we're voting. And it ain't because they like us. It's because they'll do the least damage to us. And we got to get ourselves together. So with that, I thought I'd toss that out as something to think about.
So I had a question. Oh, so do you believe that there's going to be an increase in biracial children because of that?
Because of what?
Because their race is dying off. Like, do you think that they're preparing biracial kids to take over?
Oh, I call it the Robert De Niro effect.
Mm.
Robert De Niro only marries and mates with black women. Because he understands the only way that his seed will be part of the future is if he plants it in a black woman. That's just the way it is.
So is interracial dating a good thing for black people, or is it a bad thing?
Well, let me put it to you like this. I have always dated and married a woman of African descent. But I also know that those that marry outside of the African culture, who happen to be African, are our allies. Because once you go black, you don't go back. And that was one of the reasons why they had laws where blacks and whites could not marry, because they understood that every time a person of European descent engaged in a relationship with a person of color, white went black. That's just science. That's not personal. That's science. You know,
what about the people that fetishize it?
That what?
What about the people that dating black people is a fetish to them? Like, how do you know the difference?
Well, that is a personal thing that only the person involved can come up with. Because, you know, one of the things that I've come to realize, and we all have to be very careful, and I understand what I'm about to say. Some folk may not like, but I'm just trying to drop it like it's real. I'm tired of saying things for emotional reasons. We have to be very serious about what we're saying. And there is a reality out here, and that is that there are people who engage in relationships that will and are open to dating or marrying people outside of their culture. You see, it's only that the European male has acted so demonically towards other people that we're angry. I go back to what my mother used to always say, your grandmother. She used to always tell me, Skip, don't you bring no white woman up in my house. Because you bring a white woman up in my house, I'm going to throw her down the stairs first, and then you going after
her. Oh,
God.
Oh, God.
Now, you'd have to understand what my mother looked like physically for that to be coming out of her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That made it part of the joke. But the other side of what she said was, let me be very clear. She said, it's not that it's wrong. It's not wrong. We're all human beings, and who you love, you love.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what you're going to notice as you mature is that there's a lot of sweet candy out here.
Yeah.
But there are some that's not good for you. Don't eat it.
Mm.
And I understood what she meant, because she said, that woman that you're involved with, that family that is her parents and brothers may love you, but she going to have somebody in her family, be friend or family, that's going to call you out your name at parties.
Mm.
They're going to call you that special word. That meant the N-word.
Mm.
They're going to call you that. And she said, I didn't raise you to be the man that you're going to become for you to have to go through this with some stupid white people.
Mm. And that's so sad. It's so sad that it has to be like that, because that's the reality of the situation. There's always going
that's
to
it.
Be one person that decides that they want to be stupid or jealous or whatever you want to call it. And there's no you don't have control over the way in which people act. That's just who they are.
That's it. And when I met your mother's family, oh, they loved me. They respected me. You know, they respected my education. They respected my work. They respected my work ethic, you know. People have stories to say about their mother-in-law. But your grandmother loved me. In fact, she told your mother that if anything happens in your relationship, Shay, it's your fault.
So
she said, "Coach Skip is a great guy."
Hi, mommy.
Hi.
Mama was in my corner. I had nothing but good things to say, and I've often said that if Pearl or even my mother Janet had been born in this generation, they could have been a Supreme Court justice. They could have been a mayor, a president.
Something.
They could have been a CEO. They,
like
they could have been anything. Brilliant.
Angela Rye.
Brilliant.
They were like Angela Rye, I swear.
And so it becomes important that as we move through this process, that we be very clear about what it is that we're saying and what it is that we're experiencing. Because if somebody chooses somebody that is outside of their culture, it ain't my business. It's not my business.
It just feels like we're so focused on everybody else's business, but we're not focused on the real problems. And I think it's because people are afraid to focus on what the real problem is. Because I don't understand why nobody's willing to discuss the actual issues. It's like everybody's attacking each other so that they don't have to discuss the real issues.
That's right.
Well, that's the situation. That's where, you know, it's kind of like, Daddy, where you always say, you know, you always tell the story about the guy who tried to rob the house. And not only did he bring the tools he needed to rob the house, but he bought, you know, a piece of meat so he could throw it to the dog to distract him before he went inside and did what he needed to do.
Yep.
And that's what people do. It's a distraction. People love to distract. People love to deflect. And if you really study and understand, you know, the way in which people respond to things, you realize that what they're doing on a day-to-day basis is just deflecting to the next thing. And, you know, they use it as a defense mechanism. It's just simply that. Like, people do not like themselves. Because think about it. Those individuals who are truly happy with their lives and who are truly happy with what they're doing and, you know, are where they want to be in their lives, do they have time to even worry about the next person? What time do you have to think about that when you're worried about, you know, when you're thinking about, okay, what's my next move going to be? How am I going to better myself, you know, with just focusing on, you know, measurements for me? How am I going to continue to live my best life? That's all we need to be focused on, not how am I going to tear this person down? Because the second you stop worrying about you and worry about other people, you lose track of where you need to be. And what is that doing for you at the end of the day? Is it making you a bigger person by trying to dim somebody else's light? Is that making your light shine brighter? No, it's not. Your light's still going to be dull, and it'll always be dull because you're focusing on the negative things and not focusing on what you need to focus on.
And going with what you going along with what you said, and something that Daddy said before, on one end you have to be the type of person to focus on your goals and what you're doing so that you don't have time to focus on anybody else's. And you also have to realize that the only enemy, like Daddy always says, the only enemy that you have is yourself. Everybody else is an obstacle. So while you're living your best life and doing everything that you have to do, there's going to be obstacles, because how can you even know what the best life is if you don't know what the obstacles are? So I think that on one end we're making sure that we're focused on ourselves, exactly like you said, Candace. We're focused on ourselves and not focused on anything else. And also realizing that there are people that are going to be that's what you said before. You have to realize, Daddy, that you have to realize that that there's always going to be somebody out that there's people that are here specifically to bring you down, and your job is to make sure that they don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that full circle has to be, we have to make sure that we are the best we can be, and we also have to make sure that we realize that there's people that just will not be like, there's people that just are incapable of doing that.
Yeah. I got it to 85% to 15%. in a healthy life, if you're a good person, 85% of people will love you. And with that same energy and strength of loving you, liking you, respecting you, there's 15% that are going to be the absolute opposite. And I think that one thing that we do sometimes too many times is that we can get 20 compliments and we can get one bad statement. And we spend more time focused on that one statement than on the 20 good ones.
That's very true.
Understand, they're going to be people that are not going to like you. I've often said this. I really believe it. It is possible for two good people not to like each other. And you tend to think
that
good people. Huh?
I believe that.
Oh, yeah. Two good people that many people love and respect. But you see, it's what you do. There are people, like I say, that I've worked with, they can't stand me. And I can't stand them. But the strength of our humanity demands that it's not about how I feel about you or you feel about me. It's about getting the job done. It's about facing the issue.
I believe that.
That together we can combine our talents to overcome the challenge. And in my times that I've worked with people that we don't care for each other, the bottom line for me is the fact that you would like to think that, well, after we worked together and we were able to jointly get the job done, that we'd like each other. No, we still couldn't stand each other. Once the job got done, they went their way, I went my way. But we got the job done.
And that's
something we have to learn as a people.
Right. No, I was disagreeing.
We're too much into wanting people to like us. It's so emotional.
That is one of the biggest problems. It is.
I don't care if you like me. I'm not here to be liked. I have enough people that like me and love me. And in my life, that's all I need. I don't need everybody.
Yes.
Just stay out of my way when I'm trying to do something that is positive, that moves our people and people in general forward.
Most people can't get with that, though.
Well, it goes back to what Conde K was saying about people who are always in other people's business. Part of what makes you not be able to do that is you're so busy in other people's business that you don't have time. You know, I wish there were more than 24 hours in a day. I wish that there were more than 7 days in a week. For the kind of work that I'm doing, I wish I had more time. So with the little time that I have, I don't see how I could ever spend time in other people's business. I'm too busy trying to get what I need done.
I agree. I don't understand how people even have the energy.
True.
By the time I get home from work, I don't want to be in nobody's business. I can't. Most of the time, even when I scroll on Instagram, I forget to like stuff. I'll see it and like it, but I won't actually like it because I'll just forget to do it. I cannot imagine how diligent people are being in other people's business. It is mind-boggling how people can say that they have a life and be so focused on somebody else's life. I couldn't even imagine doing that. I get lost in my own sometimes. I have to write stuff down if I want to get it done because I'll forget. I can't imagine being in other people's business too.
Lives. See, that's a parasitic life. That's what the term means when your generation say, get a life. That's what they mean. Get a life. Because if you had a life, you'd be so busy, you wouldn't have time being in other people's life. When you depend on other people to manage your life, you ain't got a life. You live off the other person's life, which now makes you a parasite.
Mm.
So that's what we're looking at with this impeachment. It's just very interesting that I'm watching, because I have lived to be in all three. Now, what does that tell you about my lifetime? My lifetime says that we went from 1860-something until 1970-something and no impeachments. Now, from the 1970s until now, 2020, we've gone through three. That
so
tells you something about...
Thing.
Yes, but it's a little worse. Because even though Andrew Johnson Johnson and Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton, their purpose for impeachment, you know, one was the violation of America's codes, the Civil War, that was Johnson. And then the break-in at the Democratic National Convention or committee headquarters, which is Nixon, or having a physical illicit relationship with a woman and then lying about it. But what Trump has done is he sold America out to the enemy.
And that's the saddest part.
That is. But you know something? Here's another story about my mother. When I was very young, there was a conflict. John F. Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev had a problem with each other. It was called the Bay of Pigs, and a number of other things was going on with Cuba. And the United States deemed Cuba an enemy state. And there was a head-to-head meeting between Nikita Khrushchev, who ran the Soviet Union at the time, and John F. Kennedy. And my mother told me, and I'm a young boy now, but my mother and I used to philosophize at the table. And she told me, "Did you hear what Nikita Khrushchev said?" And I said, "What did he say?" And what she said is, "Russia is not going to attack you from without. Russia, the next time Russia comes after you, they're going to get you from within."
Wow.
That was my mother years ago when I was a little boy. And if you, I don't know if you can Google it, but if you go back to Nikita, N-I-K-I-T-A, Nikita Khrushchev, if you can go back to the speech that he gave, he said Russia will not come for you from the outside. We're going to get you from the inside. And that's exactly what's happening right now. We better get ourselves together.
What's the last name again? Sorry, how
Khrushchev. Nikita Khrushchev.
With a G?
I think it was K-H or K-R, Khrushchev.
I see it.
You see it? Okay, Nikita Khrushchev.
Yep.
You're going back, I think, to the late 50s, early 60s. And the Bay of Pigs.
I see it. Wow, he was born in 1894.
No. That would be somewhere in the late 1950s, early.
Where he was born?
Oh, I don't know when he was born. He could have been born then. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he died in 1971.
Yes. Okay. All right.
He was a Soviet statesman that led the Soviet Union during part of the Cold War as the first secretary of the Communist Party. That's the person?
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
That's him. And I always remembered that story. And
I'm just going to say, if anybody is looking for how to spell it, if they want to do some research, the last name is K-H-R-U-S-H. CHEV. That's a lot of letters.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot of letters, and they don't even sound in
right.
the name.
Right.
Nikita Khrushchev.
It's crazy. It's crazy because Nikita isn't that Black Panther's girlfriend's name? That's an interesting name for him. It sounds African. It doesn't sound. Oh, Nakia. That's what it was. I was like, it sounds like it, but it's not. Nikita doesn't sound like a Soviet, a Russian name either.
Well, remember, the Russian language got its grammar and syntax through the poet and writer Alexander Pushkin, who was a Black man.
Oh, well, that makes sense now.
Because if Alexander Pushkin, P-U-S-H-K-I-N, Alexander Pushkin, had not done what he did, Russians would be speaking French.
Wow.
Because the Gauls, G-A-U-L-S, the Gauls were running things over in that part of the world.
Hmm.
And most languages get their grammar and syntax from art, from artistic writers, like Shakespeare did to English. And I know there's a lot of discussion about Shakespeare, but I'm going to put that to the side for a minute. But Shakespeare was the one that gave grammar and syntax to what we call the English language.
Mm.
Antara was a poet that gave, he was a Black man too, from Ethiopia. He gave grammar and syntax to Arabic. So normally people that create languages are the writers and poets of that particular genre. That's why hip hop is so interesting, because hip hop created a whole new language.
Yeah.
Because when I was growing up, you get smacked if you called a girl fat. But nowadays, they changed F-A-T to P-H-A-T. I'm talking about that word was in existence back in the mid-70s, you know. That's not a recent word.
The P-H-A-T?
P-H-A-T.
Huh.
They say, yo, that's fat. That sister is fat.
I don't know, it was around in the 70s.
Now, when I was growing up, if you said that, you would be in trouble. But grammar and syntax through rap music has changed the English. I mean, how many white folk do you hear say, oh, he dissed me? Where did that term diss come from? It came from disrespect. Black folk changed the word disrespect to diss. That's a diss,
yep.
man.
Yes.
Change the language. Ain't is now in the dictionary.
Ain't, you said?
Ain't.
What about conversate? What about conversate? Is that in the dictionary
conversate
yet?
Conversate is another one. Because within the context of the language, conversate makes much more sense than to converse.
Of course.
Conversate gives you the concept that you are in the process of conversing. Yo, man, we have to conversate about that. To say we are going to have to converse on that subject, that really doesn't make sense.
The English language is designed to make people feel stupid because there's so many things that just don't make any sense. And if you say it improperly, people will bite your head off. Like when I said broccoli, when I said broccoli rabe, and the lady was like, it's Rob. I was like, in my head, I'm like, but there's an E at the end. So that means the A is long. So that means it's supposed to be broccoli rabe. It's not broccoli Rob, stupid, but it's broccoli Rob.
Yeah, well,
so
yeah,
R-A-B-E.
In my lap, that's it. They break their own rules. Like,
you change things. But you change things to the way that they're supposed to be said. We get on your case all the time, but it's true.
Yeah. Like I say Chipotle. Everybody say Chipotle. It's Chipotle. And
I say
well,
Chipotle
when you write
too.
A, when you write a story and you give your story a heading, you call it a title. Do you call it a tittle? Or you call it a title? So when I say Chipotle, I don't see Chipotle.
Wait, I never heard somebody say Chipotle before.
Everybody say I'm going to, that's how they pronounce it, Chipotle.
What? I've only heard people say Chipotle, and maybe they just don't want to correct me.
Maybe not. They laugh at me all the time. They say it's not Chipotle, it's Chipotle.
That sounds so stupid. Chipotle sounds so much better. But that's even like salmon and salmon. Black people say salmon, white people say salmon. Like it's completely, there's an L in the word. But the English language is designed to make you feel like an idiot.
That's it. And some black folks say salmon. Give me some of them salmon croquettes. I like that salmon.
Oh, God. You said something, and there was a song that I was going to play when you said, oh, let me just say this before I play the song. So Nikita Khrushchev was named Time Magazine's Man of the Year in 1957, just as a fun fact, which I have to do some more research on this person. But he was Man of the Year. Isn't that what the president has been dying to be for, like, since he became in office?
Well, I think he's been on the cover. He lied a lot about how many times he's been on.
But not as president.
No, not as president, no.
No, not as president.
No,
so for whatever reason,
will.
This person is, right, never. He's not even going to, even though he said that they called him and he turned them down.
Oh, yeah.
Time Magazine called him and he turned them down. But there was something you were going to say, and I was going to play this song, and we spoke about it earlier. I think that this song is really great, and it really speaks to people that are considered marginalized. It speaks to having a voice and being able to understand that no matter what you're going through, if you believe in yourself and you have your voice, that there's somebody that's listening. So I'm going to play this song. It's relatively new, so I don't know how many people have heard it. I personally, with my son, have heard it about 1,700 times between the two of us. So here it goes. We'll be back in a few minutes.
She was walking in and she looked up and noticed he was nameless, he was homeless. She asked him his name and told him what hers was. He gave her a story about life with a glint in his eye and a corner of a smile. One conversation, a simple moment, the things that change us if we notice when we look up sometimes. They said I would never make it, but I was built to break the mold. The only dream that I've been chasing is my own. So I sing a song for the hustlers trading at the bus stop, single mothers waiting on a check to come, young teachers, students, doctors, sons on the front line knowing they don't get to run. This goes up to the underdog. Keep on keeping that. Someday, soon enough, you will rise up, yeah. She's riding in a taxi back to the kitchen, talking to the driver about his wife and his children, on a run from a country where they put you in prison for being a woman and speaking your mind. And she looked in his eyes in the mirror and he smiled. One conversation, a single moment, the things that change us if we notice when we look up sometimes. They said I would never make it, but I was built to break the mold. The only dream
That sounds good. To me, I think that as we move forward, there are just things that we have to start to do. And we just have to realize it as a community and as a family. And we have to get the paralysis out of the analysis and move away from being emotional so that we can begin to develop an understanding of what it is that we have to do moving forward, particularly for our children. Because everything that we do today is going to shape what's going to happen with our children in the future. And so it's our responsibility to put aside all of our own personal feelings and begin to make decisions in the interest of a collective group. And when I say that, I would even dare say that outside of just the African-American community, because we all have to live together somehow and make this thing work for us. But we first have to get ourselves together. Then everything else can happen.
I didn't realize that I was still on mute when the song ended.
I was
talking and everything. I didn't even realize I was on mute.
Wow, that's what I thought. That's why I started talking, just to pick up the...
No, I know. I was like, you hadn't responded to what I said, and I just saw it, and I was like, oh, man, I was on mute the whole time. Terrible. I had put myself on mute with the yeah. but that's the only way that we're going to be able to get anything done, because I think a lot of people are they say things in front of other people, but it's only to show face. It's never actually to do anything after, because everybody has something to say when people are listening, and then when it comes time to do something, nobody does it. So that's where the paralysis, I think, comes from.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it's that we don't care, because sometimes it feels like we don't care.
Well, it's
it
could be priorities. What do you care about? Like, I know that when I speak before groups, I speak to people. There are things that I say, there are views that I have that I know that they don't care for.
Yeah.
But my job isn't to make you feel good. My job is to express my concept and then respect your concept.
Mm.
And too many of us want to be liked. Too many of us will say one thing to one group knowing that that's what they want to hear.
Right.
And then go back to another group and say something almost diametrically opposed to what they said because they know what that group wants to hear. Instead of just telling your truth from your perspective with respect to everybody else's.
Because there's going to be somebody that hates you no matter what your opinion is, so you might as well have your true opinion.
That's it. And be authentic.
And that is the most important thing, is authenticity.
Absolutely. Because you know what's very interesting about each and every one of these impeachments, going back to impeachment?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessarily the crime that did them in. It was they lied.
Yep. And go ahead.
No, I'll follow you.
No, I was going to say, that's literally, like, that's one thing that I tell... that's one thing that I tell my son. Like, it's so important. And I had this conversation with another young person that he was with a few weeks ago. You can get past the thing that you did, because sometimes you do something by mistake. Sometimes you do it on purpose, but you wanted an experience from it. But if you lie about it, I think that's one of the worst things that you can, like, it doesn't matter how much trouble you get into for the action. Taking responsibility is so honorable. Like, people that lie just seem like so dishonorable and dishonest. You're going to get in trouble. Okay, you get in trouble. But when you lie, and that's what they say, when you lie, you hurt people twice. You hurt people because you lied to them. And then whatever you did that hurt them as well. If you tell the truth, people can get over things faster. And my son has learned that. Your grandson have learned that in a significant way, that if he tells the truth, it's a much easier process, because most of the time when you're a mother, you know if your kid is lying. You're just waiting for them to trip themselves up. And then it's a long, drawn-out thing, and it's a lot worse if you lie. If you tell the truth, there's a way to fix it, to figure out what you can do better next time. If you lie, or I don't know if I said, but if you tell the truth, there's a way to fix it next time. But if you lie, there's no way, because then everything that comes out of your mouth is going to seem like a lie. No matter what the president does, I feel like he's lying, simply because he's lied so in your face. So I don't even believe anything he said. He can say his wife's name is Melania, and I won't believe him, just because he's such a liar.
Yeah. I was often brought up to believe that you lie because you're scared. And I have always had a disdain, not for fear, because I have fear. I have a right to have fear. I'm a human being. But you don't have, you have no right not to have courage. You have a right to have fear, but you have no right not to have courage. Because courage is what nullifies, neutralizes fear. And then when you get past that, you become courageous. So instead of being fearful, you are courageous. And again, I go back to John Mayer. His song, his two songs that I truly enjoy, Waiting for the World to Change, and then Say. You know, in the song, the words are, even if you're alone, even if you're afraid, say what you have to say. Even if you're wrong, say what you have to say. Say what you have to say. And it becomes important that, but we're not living, because remember, America was built by peoples that came from Europe who were liars, cheaters, and thieves. And that is what Native Americans called them. They call them the pale face with the forked tongue. A fork is multi-pronged. In other words, when you get caught in a lie, you tell another lie.
That's sad.
When you get caught in that lie, you tell a third lie. And that's what we
How
are dealing with now. Liars cannot be trusted. Just like you say, you can't believe anything that a liar or cheater or a thief will say.
Exactly.
To the point, just like you say, the moment you open your mouth, that's a lie.
Right.
You could be telling the truth. It's still a lie.
That's the concept.
Because I'm so used to you lying. That's it.
Exactly.
I'm so used to you lying. And what do you expect? You're a liar.
And I also don't want to get my hopes up that you're telling the truth. Because a lot of times when you finally feel like someone's changed their ways, and then you find out that it wasn't true, it's much easier just to not believe anything that you say for me to get my hopes up, and for me to make myself, you know, to put myself out there to be lied to, no matter who it is, whether it's a kid, a sibling, a parent, a spouse, a friend, employer, it doesn't matter who it is. Everybody feels like they have to keep a wall up and be tough because they've been lied to by so many people, so they don't believe anybody.
Yeah.
And when the president of your country has lied more than he's told the truth, it's difficult to believe anything that anybody says. If the person that is supposed to run the country can't even be trusted, I think as black people, we have a different view on it, but for people that are naive and for people that have never experienced that type of thing, how are you even supposed to believe anything when the person that runs the country that you're patriotic for has lied to you more than this? So this affects everybody, because there's people that trusted him and believed in him and really are just being shown that they were wrong for trusting him. They made a mistake when they trusted him. And there's a lot of people that are disappointed, and it's sad when you believe so strongly in something and they end up disappointing you. And for a lot of people in this country, maybe not our people, but for a lot of people in this country, they depend on that American flag like it's their God. Because even when you do the Pledge of Allegiance, you are pledging to the flag, talking about God. So for a lot of them, they are learning that it's very disappointing, and that's really sad. But we understand how that feels, because this country has disappointed black people more times than we can count.
and indigenous peoples. You know, I tell people, I'm surprised that you're surprised. Why are you surprised at what you see? What has happened over the past 400 years? We have lived with these liars and cheaters and thieves all of our lives. And because of their lack of respect for us, they think that they could just openly, like what's happening now, where you have people that say, look, I am not impartial. I am going to work closely with the president, and I am going to develop the way in which we're going to deal with this situation. And then yesterday they all raised their right hand, put their hand on a Bible, I think, a Bible, and swore that they would be impartial. Liar. Liar, liar, pants off liar.
Just
look.
It's just sad.
He said it. He said it publicly. I will not be impartial. The president is not going to be removed from office, no matter what he did. And then they swore on the Bible that I'm going to be impartial. They told
you
the
truth. And they told you that to your face.
And then they lied into your face.
But if they're swearing to the Bible, like where does their God come in? Is that when they get to go to that thing? What is that thing called? The thing where you go and you talk to the man behind the thing? What is that called? The confessional. Sorry.
No, this has nothing to do with that, Sasha. You're not dealing with a moral people.
I know.
Like Richard Spencer said.
Because
it's hard. You see, when children ask me, Brother Kaba, you always talk about how great Africa was and how great Africa is. How did we get in this position? How could, if
and
we
then
were
you have
that
to be
great,
honest.
And my thing is, suppose I came to you smiling, shaking your hand, distracting you. And then when your attention was taken away from me, I hit you upside your head.
The sucker punch.
As big, as powerful as I may have been, if I lie to you, if I steal, if I cheat, if I attack you at nighttime, when you're asleep.
Who is wrong?
That's what I got to tell children. That's why a lot of times in the Board of Ed, people had problems with me. Because that's my answer. The Europeans that came here were liars, they were cheaters, and they were thieves. And they lied to the indigenous people. They lied to Africans. Just like they're lying today. I swear to God, I'm going to be impartial.
God.
But I am very partial. I'm working with the president. It's like the jury members and the prosecutor work hand in hand with the criminal that's on defense. How you gonna do that? But that's what they said. They said it right out in the open. And they think because they lie in the open that, well, I told you, I You know, so when it comes out that it turns out this way, well, I told you I was impartial. Yeah, but you swore. I swore? No, I didn't swear. You thought you heard me swear. I didn't swear.
It's like they crossed their fingers. They crossed their fingers behind their back.
Well, see, that's what we're dealing with now. And when we all wake up and get to this point, see, Ma'at, one of the attributes of Ma'at is truth and justice. But most importantly, another attribute of Ma'at is reciprocity, which means what goes around comes around. You shall reap what you have sown.
And nobody has to do a thing.
And it's about time that these folk paid a price for the pain that they've caused so many deserving people. Because although I look at our people and I see the challenges that lay ahead of us, I really believe that there is a very serious price to pay for purposely and purposefully underdeveloping a people. Peoples of African descent have purposely been underdeveloped, from education to politics to economics to law, protection, purposefully. And this Western civilization is going to pay a price. Reciprocity. What goes around comes around.
But that I think is the best thing. And that's why I never have to, anytime somebody does something to me and they're wrong, if I'm wrong, I'll take responsibility. If they're wrong, I'm not even going to do anything, because what goes around comes around. I don't have to do a thing. And when you believe that, it happens faster.
Yeah, but even if it doesn't happen, it still makes you feel better about the situation. Because when you don't believe that it will happen, when you feel like you're harping on these feelings, then it negatively affects you. But if you say, I'm just going to let it go, and what happens to them, what happens to them, what they reap, they sow, you know, then you let it go. And forgiveness is for you. It's not for the other person.
And I think people misunderstand what forgiveness is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they do.
I think forgiveness is what you said, more just letting go.
Mm-hmm. Because if you don't let it go, you're going to harp, you're going to have these thoughts and these feelings, and the only thing, the only person that is affecting is you. Like, it's affecting your body negatively, and you know, it's like, I forgot if either one of you said it, Sasha Daddy, but it's like drinking the poison and expecting the other person to die.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, you have the amount of poisons that go through your body when you get upset and angry, and what your body has to do in order to bring it back to the norm. Like, it's not even worth it to even get upset, because the other person is sleeping peacefully at night while you're up late at night thinking about everything, about how you're upset about the situation or how it affected you. And sometimes you just got to let go and let God, like they say. And just move on and just live your best life. If people in your life are there for a reason or a season, or your life, your whole life, you know, there's individuals who will be there to teach you a lesson. And did you learn that lesson? You take along with you, you let it go, and you take along with you the lesson that you learned, so it can never happen again. You can't let people shake you up, because that's what they want to be able to do. You can't let them get to you.
It makes them feel
good. Misery loves company.
And they thrive on it. Not only do they love it, they thrive on it.
Yes, they do.
And they're, like Daddy says, their job is to push the envelope. Our job is to ensure that they don't push the envelope. They don't get to us. Talk all you want to talk.
Yeah.
You can have a one-sided conversation.
And you know what
I'm
you
not
said
dealing
is very
with the stress.
That's it. There's something that you said that I think is very important, and that is that there are people who feed off of other people's anguish. And it's important that we realize this. There are people who, when they saw those children south of the border that were put in those, I don't know, look like Reynolds aluminum foil beds and blankets, and when they weren't able to wash, when people walked in and smelled the stench of children and adults not being able to wash, I believe that turned them on. I believe to watch children suffering and dying, there are people that were energized by that, be they sadists or whatever you want to call them. They fed off of that. There are people whose moral compass goes that way. So while we may be sitting here wondering what's wrong with them, how could they do that? We don't understand that when we get something that makes us feel real good, when we do something real good, when we help somebody, that it makes us feel a certain way. That's how they feel when they bring pain to other people. They're invigorated by it. There are people like that. So stop searching for moral compasses with certain people because they ain't got one.
And don't try to make sense out of nonsense. Because you're not, you know, as crazy as it may seem to us, allow it to remain crazy. Because when it becomes normal, that means that we're abnormal.
That's right. And that's a very natural statement right there. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, when someone feels natural in an unnatural setting, that made that natural person unnatural.
Oh, man, there was something that somebody said, and I'm trying to remember what it is, and it's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite things. It's saying there's no significance in finding. Oh man, I have to find it. I'm gonna find it before we end the show.
But yeah, that's just the you know. You gotta live by. You gotta have morals. You gotta have ethics. And when things go beyond your morals and ethics, they don't need to be around you.
Right.
You gotta have. And you can't be bought. You can't have a price tag. You can't. You know. You can't live your life for somebody else. You have to live your life the way you want to live it, and do what makes you happy. Because at the end of the day, the judge is you. And the jury is you. And you have to live with yourself. You have to look in the mirror with yourself. And you have to feel as though you're doing right by everything that you do. Because you can fool the rest of the world, but you can't fool yourself. And things will catch up. And people don't realize that. There's no repercussions. There's no, you know, there's no, even if you get away with stuff, you know, it's still going to haunt you. It's still going to be present within your psyche, your subconscious, your unconscious. And, you know, sometimes you don't realize it, but your karma is coming back to you. And then you sit there and wonder why situations occur. Or even if it doesn't come back to you, it may come back to your loved ones. You know, it's just something that that's what the universe is built on. And some of us are lucky enough to see within our lifetime, you know, that as long as you're a good person and as long as your intentions are pure, that's all that matters. And just keep on keeping on.
There we go.
It ain't over till we win.
Oh, I'm going to take that. I'm going to use that.
So that is.
And that's just the. That's the way to be.
That's how, and I was going to say that's how we're going to end it, but I also want to say with what you said before, Jay, what you guys were talking about, this was what it made me think of, that it's no measure of health to be well-adjusted to a profoundly sick society. So you can't base how healthy you are based on the society that you live in. If everyone is sick, like this reminds me of, and this is going off on a tangent, but I was watching Goosebumps with Christian yesterday, and there was an episode where the girl wished to be the girl was The girl was a basketball
player. Beware.
She wasn't a
Oh, Jesus Christ.
She was a basketball player, but she wasn't a good basketball player, but she was really tall, so the coach wanted her to be a – you are crazy. The coach wanted her to be on the team, so she had met a woman that was going to grant – could you please? She met a woman that was going to grant her wishes. And she said she wanted to be the best player on the team. So what ended up happening is she was the best player on the team because everybody else played really bad. So you're the best player on the team and you got what you wished for, but you lost because everybody else was worse than you. You didn't change. Everybody else changed. So that's what that made me think. Yes, you see, Goosebumps is not to be played with.
Nope.
It's a very progressive
you
show.
You beware.
Oh, Jesus. All right. That's the show, everyone.
Oh, yeah.
It's over now. Well, it's been another. The next show is going to be Discussion in the Black Room, Goosebumps Edition.
Oh, yeah. And a Crypt Keeper.
Oh, Lord. All right. Let's reel it back in. Bring it back.
Oh man.
So
it's been amazing.
So that's the show. And
you guys have been
like
real.
Everybody have a great. Oh yeah, yeah. And you've been regular. Daddy, do you and Mommy see the kind of children that you raise? What's wrong with you?
Oh, we're so proud of you all.
Thank you.
That's what makes it all exciting.
Oh, yeah. You never get bored with us. It's even worse now that we're adults.
And now we do it and not get in trouble. I think just the fact that we all could come together like this to have these types of conversations says so much about who we are as a people. And so I just appreciate being able to just have these kind of conversations. And I know that the value of these conversations will have its greatest worth when Caress, your son Sasha, my grandson, is my age. When he can access this conversation between his mother, his aunt, and his grandparents. I'm including your mother here. She's here, but she's just not talking. That will be the value.
Oh, we hear her.
That will be the greatest value.
And I was talking to Haru today, and he said sometimes he listens, so I told him sometimes he just needs to join in, so that would be good,
Oh, that's so sweet.
Bring a full circle.
Right. Everybody should be a part of it. Everybody.
That is it.
Whoa. What
all
is
right.
going on
Yeah, that's
there?
Fire department.
Wow.
All right.
Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn. Flatbush Avenue in
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Gonna get me some veggie patty.
Bring some home for us.
Oh yeah.
That's right.
Oh, excuse me. Why did you forget the cake? I'm blowing you up on the line. I'm blowing you up on the line.
Yes.
I'll be waiting for it
tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow we're gonna have to get to that. Hey, listen, let me.
Did you eat it all already?
No, I sent Chris a message telling her how good that was. That was, oh, my goodness. Let me stop. In fact, after this show, I'm going to get me a flight.
Hey, you say something to me.
Yeah, well, listen, that cake is so huge.
Mama sent me a picture. I didn't even see it.
I forgot to bring some today, Sasha, so tomorrow.
I know. I'm offended. Well.
Wait a minute. Where's my cake?
Hey guys, there's still people listening.
Well, at least they know that this is not made up.
Well, I I have a lot of witnesses say that you'll bring me some cake tomorrow. I will send a message on the IG if they fell through on their delivery.
And you will have to pay the price.
Right, there exactly. By giving me the rest of the cake. Okay, bye.
Okay,
all
family.
Right, later. Hotep.
Talk to you later. Have a great
evening, everyone.
Have a great evening until the next time.
Yep, and I have
Hotep,
one more
family.
Song to round out the night. And that's it. Hotep.
Hit it.
Beats in the song.